Now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is leaders. Each of my guests is discussing leadership or a leader in his particular field. My next guest is a documentary filmmaker and author who has also worked at the Griffith Observatory in Los Angeles. His work includes Modern Marvels, Apollo 11 for the History Channel. This week marks the final voyage of the space shuttle program. We'll discuss what's next for NASA and the future of manned space exploration. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Rod Pyle is a producer, a writer, a director of documentary programming for the History Channel and Discovery Communications. He's also the author of nonfiction books. Notable works include Modern Marvels, Apollo 11, and, in their own words, The Space Race. Rod was formerly vice president of communications for the World Space Foundation, a space advocacy association based in Los Angeles, and closely aligned with the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. Rod spent 2 years as a visual effects consultant on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. He co-produced and is the lead researcher for Patrick Stewart's Nine Worlds on CD-ROM, also released by Paramount Interactive. Rod was formerly employed, as I said, at the Griffith Observatory in Los Angeles, where he served in a variety of capacities for over 10 years. Rod is joining us from Pasadena, California. Hi, Rod. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for being my guest. I really like space exploration, and I love having thought leaders such as yourself on the program. So let's start off with the shuttle program. It's coming to an end right now with NASA. NASA and space exploration, frankly, is going to go moribund right now. So talk to us about the space shuttle, the end of the space shuttle program. This marks a very distinct period in American space exploration. And if you had to rate it, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being absolutely hit it out of the ballpark, great, how would you rate the space shuttle program for NASA and for the country?
Wow, now that is a juicy question. Well, as you mentioned, Endeavor's up there now, and it's performing its last flight, and then we've got one more in the summer, which will be more a logistics flight. And they added that one flight to the budget because they have some supplies they have to get at the space station that are too heavy to launch on the Russian rockets. More to the question, space shuttle program, there's a couple answers to that. I guess the overarching one would be about a 7. The shuttle was a highly compromised design that evolved into what it did under the Nixon administration after the last Apollo flights had been canceled. And through no fault of NASA's, it went from being a flyback reusable orbiter and a flyback reusable booster to the system you see today, which has some reusability. But honestly, the launches have been more expensive than ever planned, about $1.5 billion each if you amortize them across the life of the spacecraft, which is 30 years. And it's been more complex. There's a lot of moving parts in there that have to be refurbished after each flight. That said, other than the two lost shuttles, it's been very, very successful and a very robust spacecraft. So I'd say between 7 and 8, and it has flown 135 times, or will have by the end of the program. So by anybody's measure, that's pretty successful. The interesting question to ask, with the Russians still flying Soyuz, which was, of course, a spacecraft they built to counter Apollo back in the 60s for the moon missions, had we kept building the Saturn V, what would that have looked like in terms of money in return on the dollar? And we'll never know that, but it's an interesting thought experiment.
Well, it is a very interesting thought experiment. And I don't want to sweep under the carpet the loss of life, because the loss of the two shuttles actually represents more loss of life for NASA in manned spaceflight than all of the other programs added up. Not as devastatingly bad as Russians' track record on life loss, but still right up there and something that we do need to take into consideration. Now, Rod, to ask you another question or ask it a different way, you know, when we landed on the moon as Americans and as the world, we really felt proud about that accomplishment. But at the same time that Neil Armstrong put his foot on the surface of the moon, you could hear the air being let out of the balloon of Americans' excitement and enthusiasm about space. So what will it take to excite the American people for further space exploration, do you think?
You know, there's been a lot of head scratching over that, to the point that you could probably hear it from space. That's an excellent question. That's one I ask myself every time I sit down to write a book, because that's the one small way in which I can kind of contribute to the whole cause. Now, to just ramp up that question, NASA doesn't have what you would really call a public relations budget. They have to make do, especially now. In fact, they don't have a budget for this year at all. They're still operating in their continuing resolution. So expecting the space agency to blow their own horn to the point that people are going to get excited is a non-starter. I think, you know, this is a question that came up recently at a thing I was participating at Johnson Space Center. You know, what will it take? What was different about the Apollo years? And, of course, what was different was we were in a non-shooting Cold War with the Russians. We were struggling with these ideas of who was supreme in technology and political systems and so forth. And we had this program that was set out by a charismatic young president with this arbitrary 10-year end date. And then he was killed, and now he's a martyred young president who's put this arbitrary end date on this program, and NASA and the country labored mightily to do it. Add to that that at its height, Apollo was absorbing about 5% of the national budget, and now it's just over half, 1%, and you've got a very difficult uphill struggle. Now, we've got a gee-whiz space station orbiting overhead every 90 minutes. When I was a kid, if you went to the school library and pulled a book down off the shelf, usually what you saw was a picture of Von Braun's wheel in space, which looked like this big bicycle tire that they were going to put in space someday. Now we've got that, and that's a very exciting thing, but it's a hard sell. So what I think it would take to get people interested in space again, and it is a question of willpower, is a couple of things. One is trying to help the American people understand that when you work on a space program, which is one of two things that America still does very well, space exploration, building weapons. We do those two things really wonderfully. I'd prefer it to be space exploration. When you do fund that, that money doesn't get blown up into space in a capsule or a shuttle. It's spent here on the ground with aerospace contractors, the enhancement of education and science and math, 1,001 smaller contractors. All that money spent here on the ground, it stimulates the economy, and it helps young people get excited to learn. So that, I think, is an exciting thing. But what we really need is a mission that inspires, and that has been the problem for the last 20 years. It's hard to get excited about going into orbit, hanging around, and coming back. So I guess the open question is it the moon? Is it Mars? Is it what they're talking about now with the new Obama program, which is near-Earth objects like asteroids and so forth? And I don't know the answer to that. I think if you asked any 10 people in the field, probably 7 or 8 of them would say Mars, but it's a long walk out there.
It is, and there's a lot to overcome. We're talking to Rod Pyle. We're talking about NASA and the end of the space shuttle program. So, Rod, I'm going to anoint you king for the day, and you're going to be a benevolent king. But what would you do if you were king for a day? What would you do to revive America's space program and get Americans enthused about it?
I would come up with a unified idea of a mission. Here's where we're going to go. And probably if I had my choice, and this is largely, I imagine, because when I grew up, I'd say Mars. And I would dedicate a certain percentage of the budget to that, and I just make it happen. And it's interesting, when you talk about something like the Chinese space program, or to a lesser extent, the Russian space program, you're talking about programs that don't really require a popular vote to back them. So if I got to be king, of course, I'd be able to just make this unilateral decision to go, and then we'd spend a certain amount of money on that and less money on other things. And then, of course, I'd have to face the hue and cry from people that I wasn't spending enough on farm subsidies and alternative fuels, but that's what I'd do. I'd go to Mars.
All right, we'd go to Mars. Now, that makes sense. Now, the businessman in me, Rod, says, well, wait a minute. What about space tourism? Already you've got Richard Branson out on the forefront with Virgin Galactic. You've got big money, the XPRIZE, being given out to people who can put an orbiter into space in private industry and orbit around the Earth. So as the businessman, you know, should NASA turn its attentions to space tourism? Because you've got people right now who are willing to pay up to $20 million to go into space with Russia. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think NASA is the right organization to be doing space tourism for a couple of reasons. One is they're not necessarily the cheapest way to fly. I still think they're the best way to fly right now, but they're not necessarily the cheapest way to fly, as you would find with a lot of government operations. The second thing is it really isn't their mandate to do so. You know, they're a research and development organization. They're supposed to be a forward-looking and future-seeking organization. Space tourism is something that is doing okay now in the private sector, and will probably do better. And there's so, you know, part of this new space budget, a big part of it, is to be turned towards the development of the private sector. We've always used the private sector to build these things. Now they're going to fly them. So SpaceX, which belongs to Elon Musk of PayPal fame, and a number of other companies are designing and developing spacecraft that will soon be man-rated, which means they can take up crews. And those are the perfect platforms for space tourism. In fact, the Russians have even played around with the idea of taking their old Soyuz spacecraft, which is the world's most reliable by any measure, and taking people out in loops around the moon in that. So I think that's private industry's job, and they'll do it very well, but I think we should leave NASA in the research and development business.
I like that answer. Let's get the government out of the private sector altogether. We're talking to Rod Pyle. We're talking about NASA and the end of the shuttle program. And, Rod, in one of your earlier answers, you mentioned the Chinese and their space race. In fact, there are many contenders for space right now taking part in space exploration. There's China, as we mentioned, Japan, Russia, and, of course, Europe. Let's not forget Europe. So what if we lose the space race and we let other nations lead us into the next generation of space exploration? What do we gain and what do we lose by taking a backseat in our leadership position?
Well, you asked the best questions on radio.
Well, thank you.
I think it's going to be interesting because that will probably happen. The Chinese, as I said, don't have to have a consensus. They can just decide. And it's interesting because they have bought ex-Soviet, now Russian space hardware, improved it. They've flown in orbit a few times with that. They're building a space station. They're going to the moon by 2020, barring some major upheaval. So I think it'll be interesting to see. This is a bit of an oblique answer, but I think it'll be interesting to see what happens when they land. And let's just say metaphorically, they're wandering around the Apollo 11 landing site kicking over flags as if it hadn't already fallen over. But you get the metaphor. I think a lot of American politicians are going to look at each other and say, how could you let this happen? And, of course, the answer is, how could you let this happen? How could we let this happen? So I don't think, that said, I don't think there's a huge loser in store for anybody if another power gets there first. It would be great to see more international cooperation so that it didn't have to be a win-lose situation. But we've tried it on the space station, and the United States has ended up picking up most of the cost and most of the heavy lifting, both physically with the shuttle and metaphorically speaking in cost. So I don't know. I can't see how that one would play out. As a person of my age, I'm 54. I grew up with Apollo. I stayed home to watch the moonwalks. I watched in horror with a lot of other people as the American public lost interest and moonwalks were preempted by I Love Lucy reruns. It's hard to imagine the United States getting enough national willpower within the electorate to actually do this and to make this happen.
No,
I have a nationalistic interest and I'd like to see it happen. But is there a net cost to us not doing it? I think only in terms of our continued slide in science and math and technological leadership. And that's where we'll lose.
Well, that's a very cogent answer from Rod Pyle. We're talking about NASA. We're talking about the space race and, of course, the end of the space shuttle program. Rod, let me just throw one more element on this discussion before we leave it, and that is, let's say the Chinese do get to the moon. And let's face it, we're litter bugs. When we went to the moon, we left a lot of stuff there. It wasn't just the flag. We left moon rovers. We left the bottom portions of the lunar excursion modules there. A lot of, at the time, advanced technology is there, and certainly there's a lot to be gained from that. The Chinese, if they land on the moon, will probably land in similar spots that we did when we landed on the moon because of their safe landing areas, and they will be able to take home all of those goodies back to China and sort of dissect them and reverse engineer them. Is there any threat or any danger in them taking now 30, almost 40-year-old technology, reverse engineering it for the future?
I don't think so. All they got to do is go to the Smithsonian and steal it there. That's a lot cheaper.
It's a lot cheaper, and it doesn't require a flight into space. We're talking to Rod Pyle. All right, Rod. So let's talk about what are some of the advantages or benefits that U.S. citizens get from further space exploration. You started talking about that before, but let's really drill down on it and see if there is something in there that would excite the imagination of the American public.
Well, let's step back to the past for that one for a second. You know, the people always ask, what did we get from Apollo?
Dang.
What we got from Apollo was a lot of money spent here on the ground that advanced an awful lot of science, awful lot of medical science, an awful lot of technology here. Microcomputers, it's interesting to reflect that we flew to the moon and back and landed there with a computer that was less than 36K in memory, which is about the size of the memory chip in your toaster right now. And that took us from room-sized computers to things about the size of a shoebox in the lunar module and command module. So as we look forward, what will the developments be? We're not going to have those massive technological leaps for a while because we've kind of reached this bumper point of what you, which is why the new program is just canceled for NASA to replace the shuttle. Looked an awful lot like Apollo because it worked. But what kind of things will happen in terms of medical science, long-duration space flight discoveries, and the investment on the ground in science and technology, it's really hard to imagine, but I think we're going to miss it sorely if we don't do it.
Well, it's interesting because here in Ventura County, we benefited mightily from the Apollo program. There was engine testing that was actually done in Simi Valley and Moore Park for the giant boosters on the Atlas V rocket that eventually propelled the United States to the moon. So we benefited economically here, so that's good to hear you say that, and maybe some of that money would return back to the local economy. Rod, just one last question before I let you go, and it's the age-old question between outer space and inner space. And I'm going to ask you, as sort of an expert on outer space, if people ask you, critics say, why would we spend any money at all to go into space to explore what's up there when over 70% of our world, the oceans, are really yet to be fully explored? And if we had devoted the energy, time, and money to ocean exploration that we did to space exploration, think how much better we might be as a planet. Your thoughts on that?
Well, my glib answer would be let's do both, but I think my more reasoned answer would be they're both difficult environments to work in, they're both expensive environments to work in, and they both have unproven returns in terms of benefits and natural resources. So I'm not sure that's an argument that I'd care to engage in if I was having to, because I think there's good things to be gleaned from both. Space exploration in the long haul is always going to be more expensive than terrestrial because you've got to get out of the gravity well, but once you're there, you can do amazing things. I'd like to see what would happen with deep sea exploration, but in terms of colonization and the kind of big picture future that people talk about, I think space, and particularly the planet Mars, has a little bit more to offer, but that's just my opinion.
Well, Mars definitely has more sizzle. We've been talking to Rod Pyle. We've been talking about NASA, the future of the space exploration program. Rod, if people really like your answers, they want to learn more about you, learn more about some of the documentaries or books that you have done over the years, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Now, that's my favorite question. My website is www.rodpylebooks.com. That's R-O-D-P-Y-L-E books.com.
Great. Thank you, Rod. It has been a real delight. Thanks for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
It's a real pleasure, Bill. Thanks.
Take care.